Good evening, comrades, and welcome to the July 2021 edition of Poet Radio. Tonight's guest hails from New York City and Germantown, a poet who has investigated the intersections between poetry and ecology. Her work appears in The Glorious Infiltration, an anthology of innovative writing from the Hudson River Valley, and she is author of several collections, including Area, Rays of the Shadow, The Prospect, and has a new book, To Husband is to Tender, coming out later this summer with Black Square Editions. For two decades, she's been engaged with poets via her work at the Poetry Project and other locations. Well, I remember discussions about Harry Matthews and John Ashbery with her a decade ago. Marcella recently reminded me that we actually met through Kristen Prevale at the Kamako's Blues People Salon, hosted by Amiri and Amina Baraka, which must have been more like 20 years ago. In any case, I've always enjoyed hearing her read, and I'm glad to have her on the program. Welcome, Marcella.
Thank you so much, Chris. I'm really honored to be here.
Why don't you take a moment or few to introduce the listeners to what you've been working on?
Yeah, so this new book is called To Husband is to Tender, and I'm excited that it's going to be arriving in a box at my home on July 28th, which is would have been John Ashbery's 95th birthday, so that feels like a nice confluence of something, cosmic something. And I started writing this collection 3 years ago. It was during the height of the horror of the previous administration, and my mother-in-law passed away very unexpectedly. I just started thinking a lot about what it means to take care of other people and be tender and to husband, especially for men, and a lot of men I knew who were just kind of lost in the horror of this hyper-toxic masculinity that was at its apex. And I wanted to write into that, but with a more tender, thoughtful kind of masculinity that can be developed, I don't know, inside that toxicity and diffuse it somehow. So I just started exploring the word and all the permutations of the word, and it just evolved as I wrote it. And I also took up bird watching, as many, many other people did during the pandemic, and started noticing what the sort of gender home husbandry relations were with birds, and thinking about the other possibilities of companionship and support and all that. So it was a really interesting project, and I'm very happy to see it on its paper and coming out soon. So should I start reading some selections from it?
You can, but let me ask you, you mentioned the book is coming out on John Ashbery's birthday, and maybe since there is the John Ashbery connection with Hudson, where WGXC is located, what was your connection with Ashbery?
I have worked from him from 2002 to 2007 and stayed friends. And it was just an amazing experience. And I had seen him in college, and I have to say he changed my life when I saw him back in college. I snuck out to see him. My professor at the time of poetry, who was wonderful, who showed me that it was possible to be a poet and live as a poet and be a poet full time. But his aesthetic was a lot more conservative than mine, and I was pretty lost. And I saw someone said, oh, John Ashbery is reading at this hotel in downtown New Orleans, which is where I went to college. And my teacher was like, don't go, don't go. And I'm like, and all his fears were realized. I went, and he was amazing and what I had been searching for. And so then years later, my dear friend Olivier Brossard said, I have to go back to France, and I've been working as John Ashbery's assistant. Would you like to take my place? And of course I said yes eagerly. Yeah. And just had a wonderful experience working for him and staying in touch with him afterwards. I only left because my son arrived home and I wasn't able to work part-time anymore. I had to do the dive into the full-time health insurance, all that stuff.
Maybe we'll get back to the connection between your poems and Ashbery later, but I just thought it might be a good idea to put that into the context of your writing.
Yeah, of course. I don't know if people will see direct connections, but actually in The Husband, there are some references to once John told me he was reading, he had been asked for some reason to do something with Daffy Duck in Hollywood, and he was reading through it, and he hadn't read this poem for a while because it was written, I guess, about 20, 30 years previous, and he was kind of chortling to himself and like, oh, I forgot I wrote this, and this is such a funny line. And so we started going through the poem together, and so there's some references to that particular poem in the book, parts of that poem. So, and, you know, I think with it, with John, like, my style probably doesn't directly relate to his style, but when you look at things that seem like careless asides in his poems, and you just say, take one line and start researching them, a whole world will open up. And one of those was his mention in Daffy Duck in Hollywood of a carte du tendre, which is this postcard of tenderness that people would send to each other in the 19th century. And they were these maps of the country of love with like these cities of obligation and tenderness and infidelity. So you kind of negotiate your way through all these imaginary landmarks of love on these postcards. And I was just completely caught by this idea of traveling across this landscape of the heart and the mind. And so there's quite a lot of that in this book. I think some of what I'm going to read tonight, it says a way across the tender country of affection. And that's drawn from the postcards. That was just one mention in Daffy Duck in Hollywood. So there you go.
Cool. Well, yeah, sure. Why don't we turn to some of your poems?
Okay, great. All right, I'll read. So I'm going to start with earlier in the book, and then I'll kind of skip around towards the end. So, from Husband is to Tender. Do the math. Marriage may be duos, trios, or more. Maybe a web of connections, a network, a scaffolding, a grouping of two multiplying to groups and larger groups, a kin, kin to kin, and more kin, visiting kin, spending time with kin. Marriage becomes entry and part of a giant network of kin. Akin to kin, I use all too much. I know I use all too much. But of all of that kin, kin all around us that we married into, groups and circles where our circles overlap, we find a warm place with a roof, a warm place of wood and wool where one circle overlaps. What is inside the overlap? An irregular version of a circle lying over, on top, below another circle. The purpose of this essay is to figure out what the area where two circles overlap is called, where the place two circles lie on top of each other or on top or underneath, or when they touch, they become both one and transparent to each other. When they touch, becoming transparent to each other means, ironically, seeing less of each other. As one becomes invisible, becoming less visible, opacity declares presence and personality. But it is not only us in these circles. These two circles include everyone we know, everyone we bring into that space where two circles overlap. In that space, things change. People leave and people enter. They're not closed like real circles are, enclosed in their circularity. Instead, they are more like sidewalks. We walk together past each other. We walk together for a time. Mathematically, we can derive a triangle from the area where two circles overlap. If we separate the area, if one circle is blue and the other yellow, that area can be delineated as green, and slice off the round part, the part that doesn't fit into a triangle. Then the triangle has three points. The triangle is no longer two. The part taken off is maybe called area of the sector's segment, maybe called something else. Maybe it's important or not important. The real question is that mathematics may be so important they dictate everything we do and see and be. But the complexities of math building all together makes an enormous, amazing thing we haven't figured out yet either. Something so complex, it is alive. And what is alive, we haven't figured out yet either. So I'm going to skip ahead a few pages. To husband is to tender, and like so many words, that meaning has been obscured and lost and obscured and lost. I write this out of grief in current present times, in current times very present, in present times current, but going backward. I'm questioning what progress has been made, and you are questioning what progress has been made. And in that question between us is intimacy, and beyond that intimacy is a world hungering after that small moment we share, to take from us everything we have and to turn us against each other. The system benefits when husband mistreats wife, when wife is subject to husband, when there is an imbalance. It is a struggle for husband to husband truly and originally. How can I, wife, we, help with that struggle to keep me, us, you, unoppressed? To find that space so much better if equal, equitable. If each side is heard equally, equitably. Honestly, inequality, inequity benefits no one. Not even. Can't. Husbandi. Housebound. Soil tiller and occupier. House occupier. In the sense of a steward, an air flight attendant, administrative assistant, research technician, a manager, house manager. Hus equals house, bondi equals occupier, and tiller. To till is to occupy. To occupy is to be bound, bound to it by metal or words, by hearing them. Whiff. Wife, whiff, whiff, wyben, wife, whiff, neuter, whiffa, whiff, fif, viv, vive, to live, vibrant, vivian, whiff, wib, weeb, w is to v, vis-a-vis, vis-a-vis, v is an interesting visually symmetrical letter, v relates to w, there are two U's, W, U written as V. Hard point softens to curve. Of uncertain origin and disputed entomology. Where to find you, wife? Whiff man, woman. Whip versus Frau. Good wife, bad wife. Middling wife. This versus V versus VW. W, W, W. Several wives, wive, WB wave, one letter difference, I versus I versus scarlet, A. Bad wife, the bad wife, or queen, queen, weep, rap, veiled, the veiled person, guif, pudenda. What is fertile in the small white figure with arms crossed aside from a triangle and two small circles? Where exactly do you see fertility? Or what is fertile in this terracotta figure seated, looking wise, emanating wise? Wife, one letter difference, F equals S. Are wives fertility to be husbanded? In that case, well. Well, well. Shame. Also pudenda, wisdom, wifedom. Quipe, quip from Tocharian lost language of Central Asia defining what we refer to as the other side of the couple, from rib. Whatever word has both W and V in it, and change one letter, W, the letter missing from the alphabet, hands spread out and up with thumbs touching. Tocharian lost language now defining how we refer to one another is both husband and wife switching places with our male, female, pudendas, pudendum, as switching roles. Binary allows back and forth bounce, a little of me and a lot of you and a little of you and a lot of me. A small part I of you, I of me. How F relates to V. Sound of it. We learned how to say F. Through eating soft foods, food gentle enough to change mouths and shapes of what we have to say to each other. It was your grains gathered, flavored with my hunted meat in a stew, what we have to offer cooked together, variety of it, variety, V, F. The modern sense of female spouse began. Spouse, neuter, neutral, veiled person, see vibrate. The veil vibrates slightly with breath. The veil is still. The veil vibrates slightly with breath. The veil is still. As an object to be studied and thought around, thinking around this, what stands before me, what stands before us, stands between us, white marble figure, small with crossed arms. The veil is part of the sculpture, and that is where Susan Howe relates Plutarch's translation of an inscription transcription, on an Egyptian statue of Isis. I am all that is and all that was and shall be, and no mortal hath lifted my veil. If the statue has been carved with the veil can never be lifted. That is how stern the patriarchy feels. We are locked like sculptures, statues, veils carved over our faces. But then the veil would be all there is of our faces. The sculptor would not have carved a face under the veil. And we have faces. We face each other. Poetry joins with art to refer to concrete situation or situation of stone, of veil being impossible to lift within the solidity of its own self, its own medium of stone. Of course, the sexual reading of lifting the veil, because in patriarchy, something to do with a woman usually has to do with sex. Why figurines of women are interpreted as representative of a fertility cult. When many women, men, people do not birth children, and this is sometimes out of anyone's control. Children do not need to stem. Family is a social construct. If child walks away and attaches to another, if love is replaceable, can it surely be? The network is disturbed and reattaches differently and elsewhere, if the filaments are as even or as regular. Aspens across a mountain face tremble similarly. In a sense, we are and we aren't trembling similarly. The issue of Plutarch Isis statue translation inscription. A statue, while still, takes up space and is three-dimensional, fully. Stone takes up space. It shapes the air about it and folds. Its nose is a particular shape in air, its eyes, mouth, chin, feet. I am taking up space as you stand next to me in the bus, your elbow in a spot I don't want it to be. I question the placement of your elbow, but I don't want to be publicly angry. I am boiling fire held in by cool skin. The skin is thinner today, thin-skinned. Probably if you looked, you might see fire licking from inside it. My eyes shoot out flames and light you on fire. Together we would burn all heat, unlike cool stone, and take the bus with it. But I don't want my ashes to mix with your ashes. I don't want anything of you touching me. I want a guard, tired of looking at art and of looking at people looking at art, to move you farther away, to move your eyes. Luckily, I have a veil, and from beneath it without a mouth, I say, I am all that is and all that was and shall be.
I noticed this as I was reading the book. In the Do the Math poem, which is where you started, you refer to the, kind of refer to the poem, indirectly refer to it as an essay. And I was wondering if some of this writing started as prose or if there was a, you know, if there's some sort of process you use or maybe just simply why do you say that?
I think that it was a more research-oriented piece than I usually write, that I was doing so much research into entomology, and I think I wanted to throw it off a little bit to mischaracterize what was clearly a poem as an essay, to put that uncertainty that the purpose is really figuring out, right? Mm-hmm. That the whole book is to figure out, and that's not something associated with poetry so much.
Right. It looks like,
I mean, I do believe like poetry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I really strongly believe in the role of poetry to be an uncertain space that you go into. I mean, for me anyway, that I go into it, into the space of poetry to figure things out, or maybe or to not figure things out, that it's an evolving space for sure.
There's that. And, you know, I want to give you a, kudos for the entomological wordplay. You do a really nice job with that. And I'm wondering if there's any any kind of approach you take to that, you know, to working with entomology, and or is it just sort of spontaneously composed?
I feel a little silly with that one because I went to see Susan Howe a few years ago. There was a Susan Howe symposium at Pratt Institute, and she said, I use the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary, online all the time, and every writer should have a subscription to the OED. And so I was like, I'm going to follow that advice. So I went home and I got a subscription to the OED, and what an amazing wealth of information and inspiration it is. So I think that this was definitely probably the first book length project where I had that subscription to the OED. And it's just so fascinating. I mean, it's totally fascinating to see what's behind so many of the words we use, how their meanings have changed through time, and they've evolved and changed spellings, and how sometimes they're like, it was one thing I think the OED mentioned with wife is that weirdly the letter W is very associated with the definition of wife across a lot of unrelated cultures, which is kind of funny. So things like that.
Now, you were talking earlier about the the poems came from the pandemic.
Well, it started before the pandemic. I mean, it's funny because, like, I don't think we've quite separated out in a way. I'm not going to say his name, but the person who was in a position of power the last 4 years.
Yeah, I know. We know what you're
like,
talking
about.
Like,
for me, it just was so trauma running into trauma. And like, the pandemic just sort of felt like the apex, or when it all the horrible decisions that were being made kind of came to a head. And so it started before, but then I was revising them and adding to them during the pandemic. So I guess it's almost like a bridge project. So
I get that. And it comes through when, you know, in one of these poems, you're addressing grief in a certain way. And I was kind of presuming that was the situation that, the whole thing, the blasted pandemic, the blasted political situation and whatnot.
Yeah, and personal grief too. It was a big shock when my mother-in-law passed away. So that definitely, I mean, I wrote this with her in mind a lot too. So.
Oh, yeah. It's
so, you know, all those levels of grief, I think, right?
Sure. It's good to make something out of it. I mean,
poetry is a good space to bring all these different things to, I find.
Yeah. And the other aspect of the writing that you just read is the geometrics. I find that very interesting. You know, you're used to do wordplay, but you're also playing with sort of shapes and the role that shapes can play, or how they connect with language.
Yeah, that's something I may need to keep writing about, is I just, how do I explain it? I'm really, really horrible at math, and I never understood why we had to learn math. It was so awful for me to do math. And now with a child who has to
do math, right?
Do math, but they're teaching it in a different way now. So I went to these workshops to try and understand the different way that they're teaching it. And I was like, oh, maybe I would have been okay at math if I had learned it in this new, innovative, holistic way. And you know, I've also been trying to work on my poetic form more, just inspired by, I wrote an essay on Robert Creeley for an anthology that Lainey Brown just edited and published on the poet's novel. And I was just thinking about how counts underlie so much of poetry. Like, Robert Creeley's worked in fours and fives so much, and it's just interesting. And like Bernadette Mayer, she is very comfortable with the 11 syllable count in her lines. It's like different poets have different counts that they seem to have in their line lengths, you know, not all the time, but just a general length, that like a Bernadette Mayer line will be 11 counts and Robert Creeley will be four or five counts. And anyway, so I just think about that but then geometry was also the one field of math that I was good in. And just that, you know, so much just comes out about math all the time, this underlying math everywhere. And so I was just thinking about, like, well, what kind of math is underneath a couple with circles, with all these expanding and contracting circles? And I was looking at circles. And anyway, that may be really esoteric, but I just didn't enjoy. And there's such language with it that, you know, you call this, when this circle interacts with another circle in this way, it makes a, can make a triangle, but there are parts of the circle that get ditched and they have names. And, you know. So I don't know, that may be something I carry forward into future projects, just exploring.
Well, I think it's cool because, you know, we're used to sort of mentally interpreting images when we read and hear poetry, but then all of a sudden, you know, it becomes shapely, and then we start to think more, and you and your poems start to think more about the shapes of the letters and how they connect and whatnot. So, you know, that's that's getting into almost the physics of...
Yeah, yeah, you know, and there's so much going on with physics and math. I mean, just so many discoveries being made that have no language yet. And so as a, I feel like poets are the first line of language for a lot of these concepts that we have the freedom to go in and start finding new ways of saying things that science is finding. I would love to work on more projects like that, actually.
Very good. Well, good discussion, but how about we go back to some of the poems?
All right. I'm going to jump forward a little bit towards the like last third of the book when I started getting more into mythology and fairy tales, I guess. The bird husband, oh, my shadow of myself. The bird husband only perches at the window and worries over water and stays away from cats, and talks to his beloved from treetops and inside shrubs. The dense greenery shields him, so only his voice can be heard, and his voice can be heard over great distances, and his voice varies, his song varies, and carries over great distances as his voice. And what he has to say carries like song over great distances. The sound analysis of his voice reveals amazing things, and all the same, no one understands what he is saying. He is saying, beware of the poison scissors, beware of marrying ogres, beware of the queen's machinations, beware of the king's apathy. Together they are imbalanced, asymmetrical, and incite in each other forgetfulness. They forget all their husbands and wives and children, and who is to be trusted, and whether gossip serves as a way to strengthen group bonds, and whether the word gossip is unfairly negative because it is so closely associated with how women communicate with each other. The pages and servants watch the bird wife and bird husband closely and report to each other in a way as to make every small action significant. And yet no one monitors the bluebird singing and braving scissors to fly so far away to fight cats and English sparrows who brutally, in their invasive way, peck out the eyes of fledglings. It is for that the bird husband makes a box with a small hole and shimmering tassels to frighten away the territorial sparrows. It is for that the bluebird stays a certain distance from the house. The wound on the windowsill, beware of. The bowerbird invites the bowerbird to its bower. A bowerbird's bower may be a bowed space, a somewhat oval demicircle, a lunette, a vessel of wickerwork, a bird-sized basket. The bowerbird may hold berries in its beak to ask the other bowerbird in, or the bowerbird may spend years building a bower tower, a Jenga of branches, a tangle of twigs, pulling some out, studying and rearranging its construction of invention. And then the decoration of little drops of caterpillar poop, plant resin hung at the ends of twigs, so when the bowerbird hops back, the twigs will be complicated and not as bare. The bowerbird adjusts how leaves hang on the twigs, and their own exuberance hangs upon them. When the other bowerbird appears interested in the bowerbird has built, the bowerbird begins to sing. The bowerbird's song is not of the bowerbird. It is of pigs, dogs, adult humans, and the voices of children. Words almost discreet, so close to distinction, almost individual words. What they were saying is transmitted by the bowerbird to the other bowerbird. The bowerbird's interpretation is introduction to its bower. Then the bowerbird begins to dance. The dance involves transition and mystery, reassurance that if the bowerbird were to disappear, it would reappear at the other side of the bower, abject object permanence. It dodges and bows about its bower, and as the other bowerbird watches, it raises its crest, an orange flare of feathers that abruptly changes the shape of its head completely. The mildly colored architect of towers becomes a display of flaming feathers. The orange feathers standing upright are the finale of years of construction and decoration, of patient gathering and placement, and decisions of what to put where and how, leading to this display, to wait for another to make the decision. Okay. Actually, I'm just going to go back in the manuscript for a second, because I'd like to read that poem that probably was most directly influenced by Ashbery. Away Through the Tender Country of Affection, to J.A. Do I proceed from unknown lands or return to them, toward the river of inclination? Poser une question à laquelle on ne peut pas répondre. Ask a question of someone who cannot respond. Do I proceed? Over right lies the circle of indifference, its surfaces unrippling, its depths invisible, carved slightly blue into an orange landscape, larger than it should probably be. How large should indifference be? Ask a question. How deep into the sands of distraction do we etch? Further along are tufts of scratchy trees. Each bridge over water is a ride of tenderness, and to the left is the sea of intimacy. Or are we exploring in a dream the edges of where a place might exist that is not frustrating and endless, walking through a maze of alleys both pleasant and scary? Out of the doorway selling love letters and jokes is also a trellis of returned addresses. No one place is the end of traveling. Water, like bridges, carries us to the cities of obedience, sensibility, submission, little attentions, respect, indiscretion, negligence, forgetting, sincerity. Blinking in the gathering darkness, the storm finished brewing. It is the person who cannot answer, not the question. In the landscape of relation, we shelter within a slightly confusing prospect. Should I continue reading, Chris, or did you want to take a break? Or?
Well, no, I'm sure we can have a little conversation. I was glad that you were reading the Bowerbird poems, because one of the things that jumps out as you read, as I was reading through the book anyway, is a sort of interspecies connection. I mean, your book is titled To Husband Is to Tender, but it's a much broader subject than, say, a husband or the husband or that. And so I thought that was interesting. That also kind of connects with your interest in the just overall interest with eco-poetics. Interesting how you draw the you know, you look at the families of birds as well as, say, the families of humans. So that's something you've been interested in for a while.
I know, and it's hard because I have gotten in trouble for anthropomorphizing before and pathetic fallacies and objective correlatives, you know, and I think about that and I'm like, why do I keep getting in trouble for trying to explore how we relate to other species and our environment around us? And it's almost like we keep casting about for the solution for why we're so bad to our fellow species and to our environment. Why are humans so out of place all the time? What is our ecosystem? What is our network that's outside of us? You know, why do we seem to pollute and destroy everything we touch.
Money. Greed. You know, I mean,
I know, but also, you know, like, we drove the mammoth extinct even in prehistoric times. So I don't think there's ever been a pastoral Acadia Garden of Eden, really. Like, when you start looking at pastoral poems or Arcadia, they keep going back and back and back, and they're always looking back at a time that was just before that poem was written, and you never get to the poem that is actually like, hey, here I am. I'm in this wonderful space where humanity isn't, you know, polluting and crapping and grabbing things from everybody else and driving other species extinct. So I don't know if that ever existed, but yes, it is definitely exacerbated on steroids by capitalism, for sure. Absolutely. And colonialism.
It's funny to hear you say you got in trouble. That sort of makes me chuckle. I mean, the critics came out and, like, you know, shook their wagged their finger at you and saying, you can't do that. I mean, poet getting in trouble.
I got a finger wagged at me for pathetic fallacy.
It's rather than the creative imagination. You know, there's different ways to look at it, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I was just thinking the other day, I was like, I mean, I've been saying it too, is that I'm not into the traditional nature poems where you idolize the natural object and you exploit it for your own emotional benefit. But at the same time, it's like, well, what we're doing now, is this working? You know, like, I wrote this essay years and years ago called The Ecology of Poetry, and 10 years later, someone asked me to speak about it in a class, and they said, well, do you think this essay had any good effect on what's going on now? And I'm like, no, it seems like, you know, things are so much worse all the time. I mean, I guess not empirically. I don't know. I mean, I think me and many other poets and eco poets and anybody involved with ecology is constantly thinking about how to get to people's hearts and souls and change their minds and somehow rein in the horror that's happening right now. But it's so huge, and I'm not pure either. I mean, I do things that aren't ecologically great. I'm caught in the system too. I mean, I'm not into virtue signaling either. So,
well, no, it's hard to avoid plastic and the gas engine and all these things that are rotten. And what is it going to take? When it gets unlivable, is that when people are going to change? And, you know, it just makes you wonder why there isn't more attention being paid to the climate crisis and all the other things that are causing trouble.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention to you, and I don't know if you'll have much to say about it or not, is that as I was reading this book, and now as I'm hearing you read the book, there's my first impression that it's like it's almost like a continual poem with some refrain to it. Like, you have these on different pages, you have a table of contents, and you list these titles, but there seems to be so, not only is there like a interspecies connection, but within the book itself, you have like a interpoetic connection. I mean, is that how you were composing it, or is that how it came about when you put it together? Or is it just the way it is?
Yeah, that's very much part of my system of writing, and sometimes it's more extreme, sometimes it's less extreme, but I tend to do serial projects where I really pick up things that I'm working on and keep approaching them from different phrases or words or situations and keep pecking at them like a bird, I guess. That's a terrible simile. So I didn't do this book so much, but like sometimes I'll hang the poem up on a wall. I have a blank wall in my office, and I'll just keep rearranging pages and looking at what I last wrote and picking up again from that. And I think there is a lot of echoes and bounce in my work that makes it hard to separate out things, actually. Like, I probably don't publish outside of a book so much because the poems are so interconnected with each other that if someone just took one poem out, they would be like, what is this? You know, like, but I hope that when you read them all together, then the echoes become interesting.
I understand why you might say that. And there is, I think it's masterful what you do here with the beginning with the husband. And then there's some very nice segues and it just seems to flow really well. And the poem that you read, the Away Through the Tender Country of Affection, you stopped at the end of that. But if you had continued reading the next poem, it connects very well. The Cour au Cygne grows. Right. It connects with the French language, a connection with Ashbery and the French and whatnot. I think that, you know, and it's that way all the way through. It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I was reading some of your poems. I pulled out the Infiltration Anthology yesterday just because I was, you know, checking things out. And I thought your poems, which are separated in the three or four different pages across the span of the book, they were all read just fine as poems too. I mean, so you may be selling yourself short there, Marcella.
All right, good. Okay, because I worry. I'm like,
don't give up on the little magazine.
On the standalone and the little magazine, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, wonderful. We have time for some more poems if you would like to go on.
Sure. That's great. I'll read these poems. I have not really read aloud before. I mean, except for to myself. So I'll continue on after the Bowerbird. So yeah, here's one of the things you were mentioning with it. I like the title, Away Through the Tender Country of Affection. So I kept using it as writing different poems under that title. I just love having the same title and just having unexpected poems after that. So Away Through the Tender Country of Affection. A way to turn on the lamp, a way to wash the dishes, a way to journey through le paysage du bocage, through the lands of obedience, through the vistas of possibility. A way to plump the pillows, a way to light candles about a bathtub, the bathtub. Neither of us have a bathtub. Instead, we have a kitchen, a hallway, and especially a bedroom, the chamber of bed, the chambers of pillows about a form of human and a cave made of air created by pillows retaining just enough form to make a triangle of breath. The Tender Country. About us attend our attendants, holding veils above and between us. All I can see are your eyes and the eyes of others watching, observing our every move, collecting data. Datums for the river of information, washing meaning into our rocks. Deux matelots qui ne s'étaient jamais quittés. Deux matelots qui ne s'étaient jamais parlés. Two sailors who never parted. Two sailors who never talked. Two sailors never apart. Two sailors never talk. Two sailors who never quit. Two sailors who never spoke. Upon which sea do we travel together? Is the sea much like life? Or is life like the sea? When far out in both, we look fearfully for the land from which we came. Two sailors who never spoke is as foreboding as an albatross. Husband struggles to call home the flock. Dog has disappeared, and so has the wife. Clouds gather on the horizons as dark as her brows. Clouds gather on the horizons as dark as his mouth. Thunderheads, the shape of trees, trees, the shape of thunderheads. Everywhere husband looks, the trouble of landscape. Beyond the last hill, the last blue mountain, is the sea lashing, the highest tides in the hemisphere. Green fades into blue, then darker blue, ultramarine from beyond the sea. A mineral of dark blue and gold is the same feeling as travel is together. Everywhere wife looks for the husband. All of the husbands as deep-rooted as plains, cut by rivers, the sadness of erosion by water. The same feeling of longing is for landscape, is for household, as house amid great emptiness, windows lit up in the dark night, over the plains with their long-rooted grasses, over the spaces shrinking into squares tighter and tighter, over the roads every season rebuilt, over who is which what, whether one is the wife or the husband, both or neither. Apollinaire wrote a letter to his fiancée saying he had got a splinter in the head. Splinter in French is éclat, échard, or escue. Splinter, like light, may also be brilliance, shine, or luster. As light splinters into greater light, lights of many colors. Splinter is bone chip fragment, rough shiver, line of light in the head. Vowels break against an island of consonants. Each letter we draw is the same, a line of seven E's or seven N's. Over and over again, the I. Too many of you to spell out anything useful. U's blending together to make an ocean of U. W's, W, U island of no consonant. The times Apollinaire wrote to his fiancée, he was often with another woman. Another woman standing with him as he wrote, letters standing over him as he wrote. As he said goodbye to one woman, he said hello to another, and the conversation picked up from there. On the train, as the landscape flashed by, the landscape may have troubled the husband-to-be, the foreboding of the husband. Then to husband another woman or man, the husband-to-become of many husbands. On the horizon, an ocean of I or you. Which of us are vowels or consonants? How they are sounded together, close to birdsong, almost. At the same time, I wish Apollinaire's fiancée had just parted from a man and then met another on the steamship to Algiers. Bookends of men, circles of men, linkage of men like linkage of woman to linkage to men to woman to men linkage. The sound of the blender from the other room, liking the sound of the blender from the other room. Someone is preparing a smoothie. From this, I take the steamship to Algiers over the splendor of splintering sea. At the same time, you wish I were not questing after the husband, taking apart the word, traveling along its definitions, looking for a place to land, a letter, maybe you or after that A. Why not a vowel? Consonants are loving, too. Look at the word love divided neatly and equitably along vowel and consonant. Louveau, Balo, Eval, Beal, four interpretations for four letters, and more possible if we enter other languages. In this way she counseled her son, instructed her squirrel. In this way she picked a splinter up. She picked a splinter off the floor. She saw a splinter on the floor, picked the splinter up off the floor. In this way, light splintered. She saw light in splinters. Splinters revealed all the colors. Each splinter was another color, from its tip to tail, from top to bottom, changed color from start to finish, where color began and changed and ended.
You could have read that one either which way, right? It's like, reminded me a little bit of, you know, Mallarmé or something, where you could have, you read it.
It's actually based on the Kalevala, which is a Finnish epic. Mm-hmm. That is such a fascinating tale because it's every action is kind of reframed in the same line, but in the second clause. So it's all like, he raised the skull of his enemy to his lips. He drank deeply from the skull of his enemy. It's like that. And I just think that form is really fascinating with that kind of stuttering.
But the poem could be in the way that you've constructed it on the page, could be up or down or sideways, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you were talking about the Sestina earlier and that the sort of wordplay that the Kalevala has. I mean, maybe there's some connection.
That I haven't thought about a connection between the Sestina and the Kalevala. I don't know if there's a name for the form that a Kalevala is, and there probably is. I think Adrian Rich's Diving into the Wreck has the same sort of repetition of action where the protagonist is continually going down this ladder, and it doesn't create sense of timelessness, but a sort of delayed action or repetition of action. But the Sestina, that isn't a form I've worked in lately, but it was a real breakthrough when I wrote my first Sestina, and maybe that's true for a lot of poets, that it's such a challenging form. And when you write your first Sestina, I think you never forget it. It's like you become a poet after you've written your first Sestina, right?
Well, I like it because it's so like song-like. It's one of my favorite parts of the Sestina. Lyrically.
Yes, and it shows what can be done with repetition, how much change is possible within repetition, I think.
And play. It's playful.
Yes. Super playful form, which is wonderful about it.
Very good. Do you have more? Looking at the clock, I'd say we have, five or so more minutes. And, the only other thing I wanted to mention, maybe it's a good time to do it or not mention, but ask you about is, and it's just, it's not really a personal question, but, with all the talk of the husband, I'm wondering, how's your husband respond to all this talk of husbanding?
Well,
it seems like an inevitable question. Someone's got to ask it, right?
Well, I think the part I just read where I said, at the same time, you wish I were not questing after the husband. He had his moments where he's like, do you have to write that? He did have a moment of quailing, but then I think he got really into the project. I mean, it wasn't an easy project for sure, and I don't think it was meant to be either, but he's the inspiration. He has definitely shown me what's possible within a relationship with all its traveling and turbulences and equity. And I think he does really try to work towards a new way of being within a relationship too. I mean, he absolutely helped me see that, those possibilities too. Absolutely. So.
Well, that's good to hear. And it's just, as I think I said before, it's so much broader. The focal point is not on your husband or the subject of a husband or whatnot. It really goes, it's much wider than that. I mean,
yeah. And there's definitely like that part on the bus where I'm boiling fire. I hope it's clear that it's not about him. That was at the height of the Christine Blasey Ford, which I think was so painful for so many women. And I was on the bus and someone was, that's like drawn, ripped from the, daily life, someone with their elbow sticking into me. That was just a moment of like, this has to change, like this, this kind of misogyny and woman not being able to be in a public space and right, without some kind of infringement on their physical being. So I hope that's clear, that that's also just relations outside of the husband relationship too. So
I want to remind listeners that you are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM in Hudson, and this is Poet Radio, and my guest this month has been Marcella Duran. And Marcella, if you have a couple more pages anyway to read, send us out with a couple more poems. That would be fantastic.
Okay, great. I'll let's see.
Maybe the constellation poems. I was thinking that.
Yeah, go out with my son, who's also a big part of this poem. So that's the other thing, raising a man. It's like definitely makes you want to see all the possibilities for a more beautiful masculinity, right?
And my daughter's name is Constellation, so there's a connection.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, wow, what a beautiful name. That's fantastic. That is definitely Mallarmé there. I'm obsessed with Mallarmé's ideas about constellations and the word constellation.
Marcel, you're the first. You're the first person who's got it right off the bat.
That's fantastic. I am so thoroughly delighted that that is why her name is Constellation. That is an amazing, amazing thing.
It wasn't not exactly conscious, but I realized that I had been teaching the poem and then came up with the name. So, anecdote.
Love it.
Sorry, listeners, we're getting anecdotal here, but
I'll have to send you my newest manuscript, which is all about the concept of constellations and Mallarmé and
fantastic.
The senseless splendors of the skies. So. And yeah, there's some seeds. Usually there's some seeds for my next manuscript in the current manuscript. So constellation for Ismail. Husband looks out onto landscape foreboding. Wife looks out onto horizon expecting. Watches from windows the sea. At the time of your birth, I wasn't there. Do stars have lines drawn from them to each finger and toe? Are we held that way to each other in skies? Should it be sky or skies? Is or are they so large as to be multiple? In layers, they assemble protection. Thinly, they assemble home. You pointed out what looks lit in the sky may no longer be, and that gave me a turn. Sense of time traveling along with light, and how what I see may not be what it is. Galaxies of space along optic nerve, reception of light along to perception. Good thing we have each other. To compare whether yellow is green and to find the right words to indicate blue.
Marvelous, Marcella. And thank you. Well, I look forward to seeing the new book, the next book. And terrific to hear your poems today, tonight. And look forward to, you know, hopefully having some poetry reading soon, hearing you read again, and getting the poets to get back together again.
Yes, and I'll see you Saturday.
Well, hopefully that's going to work out. I'm planning to be there. And really, thanks so much for taking time to be on with me on the program. And you know, hope the book, the book's coming out next week, everybody. So, To Husband Is to Tender, and who's the publisher again, Marcella?
Black Square Editions.
Black Square Editions. They have a website.
Yes, so that's that should be blacksquareeditions.com.
Very good. All right, until next month, listeners out there, stay tuned to WGXC.
Thank you so much, Chris. This was wonderful. It was really wonderful to have an opportunity to read from the new book and to talk about it with your wonderful questions and perceptions and observations.
Right on. Till next time.
All right.
So long.
Take care, Chris. Well, bye.